might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
All right, well, we're doing our first Metal Tales from the Road in quite some time since the Hardwired cycle ended in the European stadium tours. I believe we did cover the S&M2 gigs with our buddy Chris Yurgis, which will be relevant to what we're talking about today. But we're here with Shane Obershaw from the Metallica tribute band One. What's up, Shane?
What's up, Mr. Wells?
And you were gracious enough to come on the show last minute. I know are you currently at the airport on a layover?
I am in the beautiful state of Virginia on a layover.
Wow. Well, that's actually a pretty good way to I've been on many layovers myself. This is a good way to pass the time.
Could be worse.
So you are on the phone with us because you were at the Newstead gig. But first, before we get into that, you've been on the show to talk about, what did we talk about when you came on the show?
The first time I had the pleasure was Metal Tales for the Sioux Falls Arena Tour.
Yeah.
Or Sioux Falls, South Dakota, during the arena tour. And then the time I got to stop by your joint, we talked about all things tribute band-wise.
Oh, that's right. We just talked about your bands. Yeah, so you're a Metallica tribute band. You were the drummer, so you're essentially playing the Lars role. I think people probably have checked that out since then, but you guys tour and play, and one of the things that's unique about your tribute band is that you have a lot of like authentic-looking props. You do your best to really get it down to the minutiae and the detail, right? That's one of your calling cards.
All the props, all the signature instruments, down to the exact pyro cues. And, you know, the funny thing is you and I have been in the same city playing the same night. We can't catch each other yet.
Oh, man, that was wild. I forgot
that
about
time
that.
We were up in New Hampshire, and I'm like, dude, I'm like 0.8 miles away from you.
Yeah, we were playing a really kind of non-A market town, and Shane was like, hey, are you in whatever that city was called? And I'm like, yeah. And you're like, dude, we're playing a venue like 15 minutes from there. I couldn't
That's
believe
crazy.
It. So nuts.
Crossing paths, but maybe someday we'll check each other out.
Do you guys tour internationally or just regionally, or like where would people go if they were like, okay, this sounds interesting, I want to catch a show? Where's the best place for them to find information about you guys?
Anywhere in the lower 48, anything on Facebook, One, the only tribute to Metallica.
Okay.
And we were in Italy last year, and then we were in the Middle East and Bahrain for a couple dates.
Were you doing any like Air Force stuff, or was it military stuff?
No, it was like literally downtown Bahrain, like brutal Middle East, exactly what you picture.
No, I've been to Bahrain. I've hung out in downtown Bahrain, but I was there on a
great time.
I was there on what's called a USO tour, which is through the, I believe it's through the Navy, but it's through the military where they bring entertainers out to bases to go play for the troops. And
right.
We were hubbed out of Bahrain for like 4 days, and we actually stayed in a hotel in downtown Bahrain and got the rest of the trip. We were on military bases. We did the Middle East and we did Africa, but I remember the days, we kind of had some days off just hanging in Bahrain, and it was a lot of fun. Really cool.
We had a blast. We didn't know what was in store for us, but if you can survive 130 degrees at 3 in the afternoon, we had a great time.
And what another thing that you guys do, and I guess a lot of the tribute bands do this, but you guys kind of take pride in playing a lot of deep cuts, and maybe it'd be the only time you could see some of these songs, even songs that Metallica doesn't play, right?
Yeah, right after that, I was at your place with you and Ethan for the tribute thing. We had a show at the Caboose in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I was actually playing. I was playing that night, really close to that.
That's
too.
Right. You were at Mystic Lake Hotel.
That's right. The casino. We had a casino gig.
Yep, it was about half an hour down. We were down at the Caboose, and it was a night of no hits, no singles, no smashes. I forgot what the exact title was, but. Put it this way, we played everything from Free Speech for the Dumb to 2x4.
Right, right. So that's fun. You guys should check it out. It's called One. The only tribute?
One. The only tribute to Metallica.
Okay, there you go. So you guys go find it on Facebook. And Shane, you're around. You're around in the Metallica community. And so you were down in Florida to see Newstead with Metallica Claus himself, Chris Yurgis, right?
Mr. Santa Claus, S&M, called me up and said, hey, man, I know you're down in Florida. I just happened to have an extra ticket, and what do you say? And I mean, how can you say no to that?
Right, right. So you weren't necessarily planning on going. Chris kind of, as he is wont to do, hooked you up with a ticket, and before you know it, you're there.
You know what? I'm usually on top of this stuff, but just in the process of moving from Minneapolis down to Fort Myers, Florida right now. And I saw on Yurge's Facebook thing, his whole 2020 concert calendar. And here's Newstead with the Chop House Band in Tequesta, Florida, which is just right outside of Jupiter, kind of the West Palm Beach area. And I thought, shit, that's just a 3-hour drive over from me. Let me see if I can get tickets, because it wasn't on my radar. And here we are, and Chris had an extra.
So what were you expecting? I mean, let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Jason. So is the Chop House Band, did you get into his solo stuff? Did you check out Echo Brain? Did you get into the Newstead metal stuff?
I saw Echo Brain at a club called The Quest in Minneapolis, which would have been 2002.
Okay.
And I got the record, dove into it, dug it, just like you guys did a few months ago on the episode. And saw the show, kind of, always have followed any Newstead news or, anything related like that.
Yeah.
And, Chop House wise, familiar with what he's done in the past, probably the last 5-10 years of kind of those, artsy coffee shop kind of setups.
So what I know about the Chop House Band, which is just very cursory, is that he's the front man. He usually plays like acoustic folky stuff, and it's usually covers, right? Is it, we're going to get into what you remember about the set list, but I'm just trying to get into the headspace of what I might have imagined it would be just walking in, because he's done a pretty good job of keeping a low profile, right?
It's been really low, and I've seen covers of Rockin' in the Free World. I've seen a couple videos of Turn the Page. Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, Tom Waits, that was all in there.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting, maybe Turn the Page, maybe something special like that. Didn't get it at all. It was all good. This was such a different setting and vibe that it didn't need it.
This is what the official flyer said. Some of this is pretty funny. So it says the Lighthouse Art Center. Is that the name of the venue? It says Gallery and School of Art.
Yeah, so if I can walk you through this, like, picture your small town strip mall, and at the end of this strip mall is an art center that in a blink of an eye you would miss it.
Okay.
And the parking lot probably has room for 50 cars.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it says, backed by popular demand, in conjunction with this exciting exhibition, Grammy-winning Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and legendary multimedia artist Jason Newstead will hold two shows to benefit the Lighthouse Art Center. Proceeds will benefit the Raising the Roof capital campaign to add a much-needed second floor and 5 additional classrooms to the gallery building. Come see Jason Newstead and the Chop House Band rock the house, which is a phrase I don't think anyone's heard since 1987. Rock the house on February 15th. As a special treat, Jason Newstead and friends will also have an acoustic leap day performance on Saturday the 29th. So, and tickets were only 10 bucks.
It was 10 bucks or whatever you wanted to donate. And I know he lives just around the corner from that joint. He lives down in Jupiter. This was in Tequesta.
Okay.
And the you're just wasn't going to be there till like 6 o'clock. Doors were at 6. And the show was 6:30 to 8:30, which was prompt and on time to the second. I pulled in the parking lot about 5:40, and I was the second car there, if that describes you what kind of setting this was.
Mm. And so you say a parking lot of about 50 people. How many people would you guess were there?
I would guess 200.
Okay.
And out of those 200, Clint, probably 10 of us were diehard Metallica Newstead
Whoa,
fans.
Whoa, I would not have guessed that ratio.
Yes. 10 of us that, know what we're dealing with, and the other 94% were all of his family, his neighbors, and friends of his family, and I'm guessing big time donors to the art community.
Right, right.
Yes. It was very interesting.
Wow. I'm assuming, and I don't want to stereotype anybody, but I'm assuming the 10 Metallica people there could identify one another. Is that accurate?
Very easily.
Yeah. Figured so.
With the Sad But True and the Executioner shirts, and Mr. You're just wearing, you know, guess this, but S&M gear.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't go all full tuxedo, though, did he?
No, it didn't have the tux, but he had the nice polo rock and okay. The S&M2 polo.
Okay, right on. And this and then was like kind of a meet and greet assumed to be built into the gig?
Yeah, afterwards, you know, the doors opened up and we saw seating for Newstead's family. The first two rows were kind of like, had kind of like a ribbon across the chairs, like, you know, don't sit here.
Mm-hmm.
And then right behind where you're just myself and Mr. Frank from Florida sat was Michael Alago and two of his friends.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Chris had texted me that Alago was there. Did you guys talk to Alago?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, cool dude. Really cool dude.
Oh, really cool. Down to earth dude, as nice as you can get.
Yep, absolutely.
So between the Newstead family and Newstead's neighbors, friends of the family, Alago, us 10 Metallica people, I'm respectfully going to say that I don't think half the room knew how big this was to us diehard fans.
Right. Well, and that's why I'm glad that you carved out a little bit of time to talk to me about it, because a lot of us couldn't be down in Tequesta, Florida, which is
a
place I've never heard of. So this is sort of our way into it. And of course, Jason's kept a low profile. He was a fan favorite. Everyone loves Jason. And so it's interesting to kind of hear about what he's up to. So they were on time with the gig. Everyone gets seated. Walk us through the set. Like, walk us through kind of what happened. Did he come out first by himself? Was he introduced?
Zero introduction at 6:30. The house lights go down, and let me run you through some of the production. There's literally maybe four LED lights per side.
Okay.
And I mean, simple backline setup. Then, you know, the weird thing about seeing this is the times I saw him in the 90s, you know, I'm seeing him on a deck that's as wide as a football field, and here we are, and he's on a stage that, you know, barely holds a four piece.
Yep.
So he's got some Fender Twin reverbs up there.
I'm looking at some pictures now. I believe these are either yours or Yurgis's, but there's a video screen behind the kit with, it says Jason Newstead and the Chop House Band. So he's kind of got like a logo.
Yeah, his logo's on the four screens that are combined to make a big screen.
And oh, that's right, the four screens. And then he's also got the logo on the kick drum.
Yep.
And then his two stacks of twin reverbs.
Yeah, two twin reverbs. There's a bass rig, stage right, and then his lead player is stage left, and real simple boogie setup, small four-piece drum kit. It's kind of interesting. Before the show, you could go right up to the stage, and I was kind of interested, you know, for all his gear nerd, seeing what his pedal board looked like.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It's pretty. He had like two pedal boards, right?
Two pedal boards with various stuff, some Digitech, a lot of Fender gear, and 95% of the show he was playing Telecasters. And an acoustic telly, probably four or five Fender tellies, and then custom Les Paul.
Wow. Yeah, I see this acoustic telly. Pretty cool looking green telly with a humbucker looking thing in the neck.
It was a Fender party, dude.
It looks like it would be loud in there. Was it loud?
Not really. The PA was, I don't know if you can see pictures of that from whoever sent you stuff, but the PA was... It was very, very basic, very, very, I mean, it fit the room well, but nothing crazy.
Well, I toured with a Twin Reverb for a long time, and those are some loud-ass amps.
You can crank those up, man.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine to match the drums, it would have to be a little bit loud if you're all crammed into that tiny space. It looks like even though there weren't like a big lighting package, the lights look cool, dude. Like the floor is like this cool kind of emeraldy blue-green. The kick drum's got like a purple thing on it.
Yep, very small LED in front of the kick, and then some of that back wall was kind of like a purple wash behind the screens.
It's pretty dope.
It was dope. Like I said before, when you know, seeing him in, you know, 20,000 seat arenas and 60,000 seat stadiums to this, it's just
right.
It's just he walks out, you know, the house lights go down, there's no big intro tape, nobody introduces him. It's just he comes out and says, "Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out."
Did people cheer, or was it just like, these are like all his buddies and stuff?
These are all his buddies. And you know, the average age in the room was probably 60.
Wow. Fascinating.
So the clientele was fascinating. The vibe was fascinating. The songs were fascinating. Everyone, you know, no one was standing. Everyone was sitting. And it was just a regular show where you applauded at the end and there was banter after every song. And
did he seem nervous?
A little bit in the beginning. You know, it's interesting you brought that up. Yurgis and I mentioned that. It seemed like he was totally, you know, when you haven't played in a while, you got to kind of get back in the vibe and dust the rust off.
Right.
That's kind of the feeling. But four or five songs in, as you can see the sweat to appear on him, it was all good.
So we talked a little bit before we started rolling about the set list, and I know that it's just no one, unlike a band like Metallica, no one's rushing. I don't think that the 60-plus-year-old age audience were rushing to setlist.com to upload the set list, but
I don't think so.
Walk us through what you do remember about the song choices.
Started off very mellow. The first song was a jam that actually reminded me of Nutshell from Alice in Chains.
Okay.
But it wasn't Nutshell. It had the same kind of progression, same kind of feel to it. And then it was a really mellow jam with no lyrics. And then he said, all right, is everybody all warmed up? And it's on to the second song. And then it starts kicking in. And as the set list went through the night, it got heavier and louder, but it did.
Right, right.
For an acoustic show. And then about halfway through it, you really got to see the mannerisms that you and I saw, you know, when we were kids on all the live shit videos, all the cunning stunts, everything.
Right.
You know, the head banging, the head bobs, kind of the grunts, and then the vocals really started coming out in the end, and some serious screaming was going on, and we got to see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what tune, what's the first song you remember him playing that you recognized? I'm guessing he didn't play any Metallica songs.
No Metallica. The funny part is someone way in the back yelled out Last Caress, to which Jason chuckled, and he said, it's been a while, buddy. I'd actually have to think about those notes again, which I found interesting after he's probably played it 1,000 times.
Well, and I doubt his family members want to hear some of those lyrics, killing the baby and et cetera. Might be a good call not to play Last Caress at this event.
Yeah, I don't think Caress goes over well in an art center in that community.
Did he introduce any of the songs as originals? Like, this is what me and the Trap House Band have been working on?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Some songs called The Quarry Down Under. There's a song called Hillbilly.
Okay.
Then he started playing, you know, the Folsom stuff from Johnny Cash.
Okay. You mentioned Turn the Page, which we've seen. You said, did he play a couple of Tom Waits songs or just one? You couldn't remember the name, but he played a Tom Waits song?
Just one. He did not play Turn the Page.
Oh, he didn't? Okay.
No. I know from previous shows that's usually kind of like a hit at the end for the Metallica group, but Page was not played.
Okay. Anything else you remember?
His wife was there. There was two songs dedicated to her. There was a song dedicated to his neighbor where they were writing songs down on the dock, watching the fish jump out of the water.
Wow.
I mean, this was like a really, you know, boys on the porch, boys kind of down on the dock jamming kind of thing. And every time he'd introduce a song and tell you the story about the song, he had the date from when it was written. And I bet half of these songs, Clint, had dates on them that were in 2020.
Okay. So he's currently writing new stuff.
Yeah, really fresh stuff. And I mean, he said, don't mind us fucking this one up because we literally wrote it on February 3rd.
Wow.
So a lot of fresh stuff.
How were the songs? Were they good?
They were good. They're great.
His voice sounded good and everything?
His voice sounded great. His playing was great. His energy was great. His band is great. I think his lead player and his bass player are probably in their late 20s, early 30s. The drummer's a friend of his that he mentioned was from Toledo, Ohio. Really, really great band for what they're doing.
And if you had to compare the new, let's say the Chop House Band put out a record tomorrow with these songs that you just saw,
it'd be great.
What would you compare it to? Like, what does it sound like? Just rustic folk, heavy folk, or
I'd say half heavy folk, some rock and twang. You know, he gets that twang going with some screaming in it, which is really hard to describe unless you've heard it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you take the Metallica aspect out of it and went to see this band not knowing anybody in it, it's some really good shit.
Very cool. Well, man, that's kind of got me excited about the prospect of maybe them putting out a record.
It could happen.
But it seems like, so they've booked this gig and then the next gig later this month to benefit that gallery. I wonder if that's the only reason they got the band together for any type of performance, if they're just trying to help raise some money for this gallery, or if there are any plans to roll something out or get some of these songs under their fingers or what?
I hope they do. As far as the gallery goes, yeah, there's a school attached to it. They're trying to raise more funds for that.
Yeah.
And his wife, Nikki, is a serious painter, which I think led him to get into some painting that he started 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
And everything in this gallery on display was his work along with his wife's work. And I can tell you small pieces went from $3,800 to the big ones that were going for $30,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was there an opportunity or a part of the show where people were like buying the paintings?
That it wasn't mentioned during the show. The night before, without the band, he was there with his wife and I think same members of the community raising money. And I think that's when some of the sales were going on there.
Hmm.
And he had a half a dozen flying V's that he's painted up. Total artwork guitar pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from the half a dozen flying V's, there was probably 30 small pieces and probably five large pieces that are probably 10 feet wide. I mean, big pieces.
I'm not really, very well versed in the art world. It'd be hard for me to weigh in on the quality of his art. I mean, it looks cool to me. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I don't know much about it either. I'm not in that, that gig, but the money they raise all goes towards a good thing. But
that's awesome.
I don't know if I could put $30,000 on my wall.
No, I don't think so either. That would make me too nervous.
Maybe you need that at HQ1 or HQ2.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. It'd be insane. So what was some of your most memorable? I mean, I just imagine it, because we're all buddies. If I was sitting there with you and Chris, probably be a lot of shared glances, just the surreal nature of this moment being in such an intimate, strange venue with the great Jason Newsted, watching him play music. Did he ever take a solo?
Yeah, he had a few solos.
And how were those?
Excellent.
Oh, man.
Excellent.
Damn.
Like I said, if you take the Metallica aspect out of this and went to see this band who you knew nobody of or who was in it, it was a damn good show and some really good talent on stage.
Wow. And because he had those massive pedal boards with all that fun ambient stuff, was he getting a lot of cool sounds? And were there any experimental parts of it? You said they opened with that kind of slow Nutshell Jam.
Yeah, it wasn't real experimental. You could tell it was well rehearsed, but the cool part about it was seeing Jason use his own pedals and tune his own guitar with no tech.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, hey, I am who I am. I'm here to do my thing. And,
right.
You take away that whole huge production and the whole, tech camp and see a guy do his own thing who has, been a hero in your eyes and my eyes since we've been, late 80s, early 90s kids.
Right.
It was fun to see that. It was just to see that vibe and to see someone who's been so big to, us diehards in that setting was really what made the night.
Other than the Last Caress comment, did he have anything to say about Metallica? I know that wasn't at all the point of the evening. I'm just curious if did he make any allusions to his former band or anything like
that? Yeah, after a couple songs, he said, I appreciate everyone coming out tonight. I appreciate you listening to the music. I appreciate you listening to the lyrics and soaking it all in, because sometimes that big crowd noise that I used to be, that I was so used to, you couldn't appreciate people taking in your art or your craftsmanship.
Hmm, that's cool.
It was kind of a thank you for sitting down. Thank you for being quiet. Thank you for not screaming. And thank you for, taking in what I want to give you guys.
Right. That seems very much in line with, very consistent with everything we know about Jason.
Absolutely.
So they end the gig and you got to be pretty excited knowing that you're going to shake the man's hand and be able to tell him thank you and get whatever, get
for
stuff
sure.
signed. And so what's the vibe? So if there's only 10 dudes there who are Metallica cats, I mean, I doubt his neighbor's waiting in line to meet him. So
his family, wanted to say hi and give him a hug, and wife wanted to give him a kiss and said, I'll see you at home in a half an hour, however it takes. And then he comes over and says, what's up, guys? What you got for me? Because he all saw us kind of, holding some merch and some vinyl and some posters to get signed.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, as gracious as anyone could ever be and as down to earth as anyone could ever be, and took as much time as we needed and signed everything that everybody had for him.
So what did you have to talk to him about? Did you tell him about your band?
Talked about the band a little bit. He asked a couple questions. The funny part is a couple years ago in Grand Rapids, Michigan, his sister came out to see my band.
Hmm.
So I brought that up and we talked about Michigan a bit where we've played, where we've been, what clubs we've been to. And then the cool part was, is before he got to us, his brother came up to us and started talking, and he lives in Kalamazoo. Hmm. And his brother started telling us story. We didn't even ask. He just started blurting out stories about his brother and the first time they went to see him in 1987 on the Monsters of Rock at the Silver Dome in Pontiac, Michigan.
Hmm.
Told us about him selling his home and his studio in California. And when he sold that, 3 18-wheelers took all his gear to Michigan, where it's currently in a pole barn. So I thought that was kind of cool.
It's pretty funny. Like, I know this wasn't the case. I'm just, my humorous brain is orienting this story as like, this dude, Jason's brother's just telling him all this shit that Jason does not want people to know.
I was thinking the same thing. It's like, where's this pole barn at?
What's his brother's name?
Tim.
He's like, Tim, zip it, dude. Zip it, bro.
Yeah.
No need to tell
them where the stash is.
No need to tell these nice guys about me selling my house and moving my gear. And he's like, sorry about that. My brother, what I like about that story is that it sounds like his brother's still real proud of him and probably.
Oh, absolutely. The whole family there was very proud.
And then they notice all you nerds over there. And I say that affectionately, myself included. And that brings out probably what
100% truth.
They haven't really been able to do that for a while. I mean, it's been a long time since Jason was in the band. So they get to dip back into that energy of being proud of him in that way and bragging on him and all that stuff, you know?
Absolutely. His brother couldn't be any more proud of him. The interesting part, I'm thinking of 3 semi-fulls of, semi-trucks full of gear, as he also told us, he threw out 3 large dumpsters completely full of old memorabilia and
wow.
Metallica stuff.
Wow.
I'm thinking, wow, what was in those dumpsters?
Yeah, just to know where they are, just to go through them.
Be quite interesting.
Wow, dang. What did you talk to Alago about? Did you tell Alago you knew us?
You just brought up the whole podcast, told, they got talking about that, and Alago's just a great guy. We talked for 5 or 10 minutes, and then mm-hmm. Alago had his 2 guests. They talked to Jason first, and then they kind of split.
Yeah.
And then Jason came over. You just had some S&M stuff for him to sign. They talked about that for a bit. I had the Black Elm on vinyl. I thought that would look cool with a silver Sharpie made out to me, autographed by him.
Awesome. Awesome.
And, we talked about my band. I had some production questions about him. I asked him what his favorite stage was to play on, and we kind of talked about that stuff.
What do you have to say about that?
I asked him, what was your favorite production? And he thought it was a favorite venue. So he says, my favorite places are the Tokyo Dome, which he called, the Enormal Dome, which I think Lars also calls it, some Enormal Dome.
Right.
And then it was Red Rocks out in Colorado as his 2 favorites.
Awesome. Very cool.
And then I said, well, what about Metallica production wise? Like, Justice, Snake Pit, Poor Touring Me. And he says the most fun he had was, the Poor Touring Me stage at 96, 97 on Load. He says, you definitely got your steps in that night.
When he's like recalling this kind of thing, because I'm sure he anticipated getting some Metallica questions, did it seem like he was having to like really go deep and really think about it? Or was this stuff kind of like forefront of his mind?
No, I asked him the production credits. He goes, dude, that's a really good question. And he thought about it, and yeah, it was straight up. And then he talked about the Load stage. He says, you really got the steps in that night. And he says, as the tour ended, I realized that the floor area of that tour, when they could go up on the barricade and get down, eye level with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
He says that started to take a toll on his back because that's always concrete.
Right.
So he says most decks are a little bit softer, but all the time I spent, up on the barricade eye to eye to people on that tour, I mean, you got to think of all the time that I've been standing and running around on concrete for a whole year.
Right. Wow.
So that was kind of cool to get that perspective and get the questions answered I've always wanted to ask those guys.
Yeah, and it just seems like he's just super willing to hang and talk. Kind of everything we thought, He's still just kicking it and doing the art he likes to do. And
very much so. And another guy that showed up literally had 10 things to get signed, and he graciously signed it all and took his time with the guy, and it was awesome.
10 seems like a lot. That seems like kind of a stretch to bring.
A little overkill. The guy was super cool because he was getting stuff signed for
other people.
All friends of his, and he had the names on them to make it out to, and Jason. I think if there would have been 30 things to sign, Jason would have signed them all.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It was so cool to watch. I don't think there was more than 5 or 10 of us that were hanging around in the art gallery, and the night came to an end at, it was only like 10 o'clock, and that was it, man.
Very cool, very low-key.
Very, very cool, low-key, fun, lots of energy. a lot of good people watching with the average age of 60, and another night in the books of meeting one of our heroes, Clint.
It'll be interesting to see what the gig later this month's like, if anyone tries to go again. I know the next one's going to be acoustic, and it's not even billed as Chop House. It's billed as Jason Newsted and Friends. So who knows what that'll be? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Now that you say that, that could be a totally different vibe.
Well, Shane, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I know everyone's going to be anxious to kind of hear some of the details. And
once again, thanks for having me. It's fun to dive back into the Newsted era for a couple days.
Absolutely. And we're going to have you on in the future to talk about all the Lars's drumming stuff. We had you booked, but then some of the schedule stuff fell through. So we'll try to get that done soon for sure.
The Lars gear episode, I'm really looking forward to. We can have some fun with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. For all of you out there who are interested in the tribute band, go check it out. One, the only tribute to Metallica. You can find it on this thing called the internet.
The World Wide Web.
And we appreciate you, man. I'll see you on the flip-flop.
Sounds good, Clint. Take care.
Hey everyone, this is Ethan and Clint. We're here to tell you about supporting the show via Patreon.
That's right. Every week, Ethan and I work hard to bring you the best Metallica content possible. If you think the show has value, consider supporting us on a financial level at Patreon.
For $5 a month, or the price of 2 cups of coffee, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. But that's not all.
In addition to being able to help sleep at night for supporting your favorite podcast, we've also come up with incentives to say thank you that are exclusively available to patrons. For example, for a pledge of $5 or more, you immediately get free downloads of every cover Our World Blackened EP.
Ticket giveaways for shows like SNM2 and Slane Castle.
Box sets, rare vinyl, Metallica memorabilia like SNM2 guitar picks.
Email priority, meaning we'll read your email first on the show with a chance to ask guests like Hailstorm, Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, and Metallica Road Crew your very own questions.
And the opportunity to come on the show as a guest for our Metal Tales bonus episodes, in which you can tell us all about any Metallica show you've been to in the past.
All this and more for becoming a patron and supporting Metal Up Your Podcast.
We couldn't do this show without you, and to everyone on the ride with us, we sincerely thank you. Peace.
Adios.
Ha 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 ha!